always curious, you know, a big thing for us is recruiting, bringing new people in, you know, onboarding. I'm just curious what other firms do as far as onboarding and how fast they get them onboarded, like, or if they have different systems, like from getting their, you know, just say their 7 to their 66. And like, what are they doing after that? Are they calling their natural market? Are they calling a call list? Like,
okay. So are you, well, I think you have to have an onboarding strategy. Mm-hmm. You know, all, you know, firms, teams, they kind of have a name. So let's say somebody is called the, you know, the Ascend Financial, you know, planning team. Mm-hmm. And they got to have a process for recruiting. Now, at a broader level, when you're recruiting, there's two types of recruits. There's those that have experience and those that don't. Okay. So is your organization, the one that you currently work in, are you all interested in recruiting and transforming people into sales professionals? Or are you interested in recruiting from a competitive standpoint? We call those competitive hires. So those are the two tracks. So you got to have a process for each one. Now, I have a PowerPoint presentation on recruiting competitive hires.
Okay.
And, you know, if you want that to be the call today, I'll share it with you. If you are going to look at folks that might have some sales experience but no industry experience, okay, then we need to talk about, you know, what your process is to bring them on board, what your selection process is, the characteristics you look for. I used to, anybody I brought in had to have, you know, some kind of dynamic background, meaning I tended to hire people that would complement what the needs of my organization were. So sometimes I hired CPAs, mm-hmm. and I let teams interview them, and I hired them directly onto a team. And sometimes I hired lawyers that maybe had some estate planning background, and I hired them directly onto teams.
Yep.
Okay. So when you're hiring, when you're people, was there like a salary offered, or is it all part of the revenue?
Okay, so when they got hired, they got paid a salary, and then there were performance goals tied to asset growth and client acquisition, okay? And so they had some performance metrics to make in the first year. You know, I'll give you an example. When I was at Merrill, the minimum for third, what we called the third quintile performance, was $10 million in assets in the first year. Okay. Meaning that if you gathered $20 million, you were probably a first quintile performer. Okay. Now, I'm looking for people who have some kind of an affinity group. You know, did they come from, and sometimes I took shots, I took risks. But pretty soon you start to learn the science of what makes for a successful, you know, individual. Do they have the grit? Do they have the drive? You know, do they have the intellectual capacity? Do they have the personality? okay? Like, when I'm talking to you guys, I can tell that you have some grit. You've got personality. You're inquisitive. You're eager to learn. You want to grow. You question. You challenge yourselves. I'm looking for, you know, when I'm out there hiring, I'm hiring those kinds of folks.
Yep. So, Curtis.
And so they could have a, they could be a music major sometimes. Okay. But if they had the characteristics, you know, I might hire them.
Yep. So let's take that example of someone that needs to bring in 10 million, right?
Okay.
So they come in, they get licensed. Who are they reaching out to as far as to generate that 10 million?
Okay. So what we do is we get them to look at the affinity group as a, their first niche market. This is the, these are the contacts and the people that they know that they kind of come in with, okay? So if I hired a person, let's say from IBM, and he wanted an unlimited income potential, he might call on clients that he went out after professionally. So that becomes his affinity group. Okay. Yep. And then we've got to teach him.
Curtis, yeah. Mike's in the meeting room, if you could let him in.
Oh, okay.
If that's
true. There we go. Sorry about that.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, buddy. How are you guys?
Hey, Mike. How are you? Mike, we're having a conversation about... We're having a conversation about recruiting, and so we'll bring you up to speed on
so, that. Yeah, Mike's on an airplane, so he'll probably be on mute the whole time.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yep.
But
is he flying?
Yep, I'm gonna listen in.
I hope he's.
I'm up at 35,000 feet in the air, so I'll listen in to you guys.
Okay. So, good.
So we feel like the new hire, you know, the inexperienced hire, we've kind of mastered. Okay. Like you were, I think that competitive hire,
right?
Thing that we struggle with.
Okay.
So if you can work on that, I think that would be very helpful for us.
Okay, so that's where you want me to spend my time, on the competitive hire.
Do you agree, Lenny? Or
no, I agree. I think that's very important. But I didn't know if we want to stick to the plan and stay on Supernova. Maybe just based on it for 5 minutes, and then let's go over the normal agenda. Cause then, I'd like to learn how to do the Supernova and then get into recruiting later on.
Right. Yep. What I have is I've got a PowerPoint that would probably take me 30 minutes to get through on recruiting and the different stages and steps leading up to onboarding, what you do in the first 60 days, 120 days, everything from the offer, how to bring them into the culture, into the environment, all of that. So when we're ready to have that discussion, you know, let me know. I can pull it up and I can take you through it.
So I think why don't we do that next after Thanksgiving. This way Mike will you know, be able to see it and we'll all be able to participate on that.
Sure.
That'd be great.
You just let me know. It's in my database and I can pull it up very easily. In fact, I did this like a week ago with a manager who was struggling with recruiting, and I had to take him through the whole recruiting process. So yeah, it's fresh on my mind, and I did a lot. I mean, 1 year I recruited $14 million in revenue. Ooh. And what that does to your bottom line is extraordinary, because they're not only bringing in their revenue, but they're bringing in their assets. And then some of the strategic initiatives I had to work on, which were, you know, maybe in the insurance area, annuities, long-term care, portfolio management, mutual funds. So they bring all that with them. And so what it does is it takes your numbers, you know, to another level. You know, it was interesting. One of the most successful recruiters in the firm, when I was a young sales manager, he used to take these $250,000 guys and transform them. He was a former Marine. He showed them how to dress, how to act, how to behave, when to show up, when to leave, everything. And what's interesting about that is he was really good. And so I said, well, you know, if I'm going to spend that amount of time, effort, and energy on the guy doing 250, why don't I start recruiting people who were doing $1 million or more? And I found that that was an area that management at firms weren't paying attention to. In other words, they said, I got more problems and issues to deal with than deal with somebody who was already successful. And so the successful people weren't being paid attention to. And I would ask a fundamental question. How are you currently being coached and developed? And they say, what do you mean? It wasn't taking place. And that became part of the dialogue that got me in the door and I was able to, you know, recruit. You know, so we'll cover that and talk about it in more depth. So that'd now, yeah. So now, and that's part of your job as a leader is to bring in talent. And there's a war for talent out there. And so you got to know your culture. You got to know what your story is. So you got to develop a recruiting story. You know, why should somebody come and join us? What are they going to get? What are they going to receive when they come to you? So be thinking about that when we start to get more into recruiting. Okay. Now, I always start these agendas off with what's on your mind, you know, before I get started on today's agenda. So was that it in terms of your questions about recruiting? Is there anything else on your mind that I need to cover?
I think we're good.
Okay. All right. One of the things I want to talk about just briefly and draw your attention to is this whole idea of centers of influence that are able to send you a steady flow of high quality referrals. You know, that could be, you know, invaluable in your business. And if you've got your guide out, you know, I'm referring to, you know, page 25. You know, I was dealing with, you know, a wealth manager and, you know, he was saying, God, I'm sending this guy referrals. He never sends me anything back. So they never have time to meet with you. They seem to have a lack of confidence in you and a hesitation to send business to you. You seem to send them more business than they send you. And you only get sporadic referrals. And the referrals they do send aren't always a good fit. So how do you go about really thinking about centers of influence? And these are people that aren't necessarily CPAs and attorneys. These are people who, you know, through your personal experience, you've known them for a while and they like you and they're willing to help you, you know, grow your business. And that's really the idea. And so when I said, you know, begin to identify maybe six centers of influence, imagine the impact if you had six individuals that you were friendly with that ran in a circle where they could give you one name per month. Okay, and let's say that we go back to your target and they say, well, you know, I'm a boater and I know five guys that are multimillionaires that are boaters that I can introduce you to. You're saying, oh, look, just personal introduction, one at a time. Or, you know, my golf foursome has, you know, at my club, there's about eight guys that I know that you should be talking to. Bang. So you want to get that kind of individual. They're not always CPAs and attorneys. In fact, those are some of your hardest to refer back. They're welcome and ready to take them, but they're not the sales guys that are gonna, you know, they don't know how to give back. And so you have to coach and develop them to be good personal introducers to the type of clients that you want. Now, let me stop there for a moment. So do we get that concept? So if you get six of them and they can do one a month, that's 72 per year. Okay. So, and if your target is a million, you know, and your close rate is 80 to 90%, you're going to bring in 50 to 60 million in new assets every year. So you got to really get intimate. Each center of influence is going to be treated, you know, they're going to have a folder. You're going to have regular contact and meetings with these people. They're friends. You're going to take them out to dinner. You're going to thank them for referring great people to you and that you hope they continue. And you want to hear, yeah, as a matter of fact, give them and coach them on how you work. Coach them on your personal introductions process. Remember we talked about that? Coach them on how you treat people so that they aren't going to feel, oh man, if I turn this individual over, I'm not sure you're going to handle it appropriately. So your service model becomes very, very critical.
So
question.
For me, I don't think I have a single DOI that gives me one a month. So that should be something that I should revamp then.
Yeah, I don't know. Absolutely.
I don't know if you guys do, but that's something I'm definitely lacking.
Well, keep in mind now, we're cultivating this. We're just starting this now. So yep. We're now working our center of influence. They've been identified. Now we have to work them. This isn't going to be on autopilot. You're going to have to work your center of influence.
Correct.
So if you've got people that you've identified and you coach them up on Supernova and your new behaviors and your concierge practice, do they have the ability to refer people to you? Okay.
Got it.
So can, let's just role play, can one of your COIs be one of your concierge or your top clients?
You addressing that to me?
Yes.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah. Sometimes that COI can be a client. Oftentimes, it's not. And I'll give you a personal experience. I'm with a fraternity, and we meet once a month, and I did a panel on financial planning, and I'm coaching two financial advisors in the Bay Area, and this one woman, very, very sharp, I said, you know, I know the head of trauma surgery at the University of California, San Francisco, who hasn't really done much. I said, his curriculum vitae is so large, you could put it in a wheelbarrow. Why don't I make the introduction? Well, her being familiar with the introduction process now says, what can we do to get you to arrange this personal introduction, Curtis? That's it. So I'm going to call them up and figure out when I can put the three of us on a short call and let her do her thing. It's as simple as that. Now, I'm going to have a folder for my COI. I'm going to know about his background. I'm going to know the circles he's in. So where she needs to take it a step further, oh, Curtis is chairing a nonprofit foundation and has board members. Oh, he's in this fraternity and they're all professionals, entrepreneurs, physicians, doctors, lawyers. Let me tap into that. And so you write all of the things down and look at it as a circle. You know, what is the circle of that relationship and where does it extend to? Okay. So, Mario, give me an example of maybe one person that might fit the criteria that has this circle that you haven't even tapped into and haven't even inquired about. Do you have one that comes to mind?
Yep. And I'm working on hiring instead. So one of my good friends, the family is very wealthy, well-to-do in Fort Lauderdale. Okay. They own a boat company with 500 employees. And I've been tapping him for referrals forever, and it just wouldn't happen. So I decided to get him licensed instead and said, you work your network and I'll make you rich.
Okay.
I don't know. That was my...
That was your answer, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so, not a bad answer. So, but again, he didn't fall into the category where he was willing to refer. So you got to ask him, is there an element that makes you feel uncomfortable doing it? You know, did you educate him on your personal introductions process? Because at the time, you didn't know what that was. Correct. You didn't have a personal introductions process until we discussed it on our last call. So now that you have your personal introductions process, the reason they don't refer, they don't know if you're going to just jump all over the potential prospect or client and just try to sell them all kinds of things. So you have to know that these are very important relationships. They don't want to have them screwed up. They want to know that you're going to take care of them. So you got to describe your concierge practice and how you work and how you will take care of this individual. And you want a personal introduction. You don't want, here's a business card. Here's a name. Go call this guy.
That's a question on that. How do you know, like if you're telling someone this is how you run your practice and this is like the concierge service that you provide,
right?
And you haven't met this person yet, aren't you kind of telling them something that may not be true, since like you're not even sure if they're going to fall into like your minimum requirements in terms of providing a concierge service?
You have to educate them. You know, you start off, and if let's assume they're not a client, and you have to tell them, look, let me tell you how I could use your advice. Okay, I'm looking to expand my network of affluent individuals that have needs in the areas of estate planning, financial planning. And, you know, I take a holistic approach to clients, you know, and you explain your service model, your concierge practice, and, you know, who in your network might be a good fit. You know, I accept relationships that have $1 million or more in financial assets, which is my target client. I find that that type of client has the needs and I have the expertise to really take care of them. You know, do you have someone in your network or your circle that fits that profile? Okay. So now all the BS is out of the way. You know, don't bring me a $200,000 guy because I'm looking for people who have $1 million or more in assets, right? So that becomes part of your dialogue. And so these are people that like you, that really want to help you. I've got friends that want to help me. We all have, so you got to find people that like you, that really want to help you. And sometimes it's a board I'm sitting on. Sometimes it's at a community event and I see an old friend. We make the connection. It's that type of thing. So I'm telling you, really go out of your way and cultivate the COI. Don't just identify them, but cultivate the relationship with six individuals. Get your one, then your two, then your three, and cultivate them. One individual I'm working with is getting a steady stream from a mortgage broker. I mean, these folks come in all sizes and shapes, okay? But imagine what it could do to boost your business in a positive way if you operated that way. So it goes beyond the CPAs and the lawyers, you know, who are so afraid that they might lose a client that they don't want to refer. So, but if you're doing business with them and they understand your concierge practice, then it tends to work. Okay. All right. Let's talk about this team structure in the next few minutes. You know, this, you know, there's five directors on your delegated team of duties and responsibilities. There's your director of planning. And this person is ensuring that every client has a plan. The director of plan implementation, they oversee the investment process. You know, they're involved or engaged in the portfolio management process. These are client-centered. The director of brand, they're making sure that every client is aligned with the 12-4-2 process. You know, rapid response to problems. They're making sure that your top 80-85 relationships are in the folder. Have a folder system and receive your monthly contact. And this is an appropriate time to now schedule time with Cindy and look at the scheduling tool that we've created to help you manage the process. Now, the person we want to manage the process is not you, but your practice manager. You might call them a client service associate. You might call them an administrative assistant, but they become now your practice manager. So if you all have one each, then I would suggest we get all four of them on a call with Cindy Bowie, and she'll take them through the scheduling program that we have. And organize that for you, okay? So that's the first three directors. Now, sometimes you might wear more than one hat. You might be responsible for being the director of planning and also plan implementation if you don't have that delegated to another team member. The team-centered directors are the director of growth and marketing. Now, I'm not saying nobody overlaps or does any of these roles, but there's a person on the team who is accountable. Okay. So they're tracking your metrics in these areas. So the director of growth and marketing holds the team accountable for implementing acquisition strategies and the 90-day free look. Okay. Remember, the 90-day free look is that test drive. Let me treat you like a client for up to 90 days to see if you like the service and our capabilities and what we provide. Okay. But you can close these people in 5 days. If you can close them in 5 days, you don't have to wait 90 days to do this. But they get on your monthly call schedule. The director of leadership, they serve the team as the guiding light by helping them stay focused and productive. Okay. So there's going to be this leader on the team. Oftentimes on these teams, sometimes the biggest producer is not the leader of the team. Okay. So, and also sometimes leadership can shift. Sometimes one individual takes a leadership position in a certain area. So you've got to, be able to feel comfortable sharing leadership sometimes. That's a virtue of a great leader. Go ahead.
So we, obviously, we have our own respective teams, but at the same time, we do share a lot of resources, right? So, like, for instance, Lenny and I have about 27 advisors on our team underneath us.
Right.
Brant. What do you have, like six now, Brant? Six advisors on his team. Mike has another 12 advisors on his team. So can these, right, director of planning, can these be overlapped in a sense of maybe somebody takes the role for the entire organization, or should each team have one separately?
Well, each team should have an accountable person. Now, if you give one person all the accountabilities, then that's overwhelming that particular team member. So spread it out, and it doesn't mean necessarily that they are the best at a certain function, but they're going to hold the team accountable. So when we get down to measurement and topics like game boarding, scoring, and that sort of thing, and you have your weekly huddle and you say, how do we do on planning this week, Joe says, our goal was to do six plans and we did five. And your response is, well, that's pretty good. How come we didn't do six? Well, one fell through, didn't keep the appointment. Your next question is, well, did they receive notification 3 days that their planning appointment was coming up? Yes, they did. It was a family emergency. Oh, I understand. So that's where you want to start holding the accountability and making sure. So now this individual that's accountable knows that, I better be prepared when I come in because I'm going to get asked these questions. And you might further drill, how successful were we in the planning? Did we uncover anything in these plans that look like opportunities for us? Oh, absolutely. We've got one situation with Second to Die. We've got a portfolio management situation here. They've got dormant assets just aren't being touched, aren't being looked at. We need to check into that. We've got somebody with an old line annuity. And there's a 1035, exchange option. And there are people who have underfunded their IRAs. So we've got plenty of opportunity to take advantage here. And that's what you want to hear during these calls. So that's the leadership model. And what you're doing now is you're creating that very agile SEAL team where there's the medic, there's the sniper, there's the radio person. But each person can overlap and pick up the slack for any team member. Okay? They're cross-trained.
Got it.
Okay. Any questions, Lenny, on that?
Yeah. My only question is, as we develop these and build them, you know, our like director of planning, director of implementation, brand management, are these like salary positions? Are they producers? What's
No, well, they're already getting paid by the business. So imagine a team of two CAs, two client associates, and three producers. Well, the producers have their functionality now identified. Their delegated duties and responsibilities have been identified. The CSAs, we've honed in, they're getting paid already. Everybody's getting paid, and their duties and responsibilities have been refined. Okay? So now you're making adjustments to what they do on a daily, weekly basis. Okay?
Gotcha.
I guess what I would do is with everybody, you know, look, if we perform, everybody wins. That was always my philosophy. You know, in my organization, I would say 80% of the CAs were receiving supplemental compensation from their financial advisors. And then if we did really well as an office, I was going to look at making sure they were bonused appropriately out of the bonus pool. Those that got a far exceed got more than those that just exceeded requirements and those that just did their job. You're not going to get something extra for just doing your job.
We have like pseudos today, I think, Lenny, with Dominic, but we don't have any of those pieces put together yet.
Okay. So now, as you begin to structure and look at teaming and team dynamics, that's one of the things that you've got to do. There's got to be your accountability partners on your team. And you've got to describe these duties and responsibilities to them.
Got it.
And I'm going to tell you, with a lot of studies and research have been done, people want that. They want to be recognized as having, you know, grown into specific roles that you have identified for them. Any questions on the roles? It's all in your guidebook. Okay. Leadership. You know, in my book, in the first couple of chapters, I talk about the role of the servant leader as part of what happens. And that's the servant leader is the servant first. You're there to, you know, to serve. You're there to, you know, make sure people are happy. You make sure that they're inspired, that they get the job done, that they want to get the job done. And so, you know, you all are leaders and coaches. So your job, if you read that white paper I gave you as manager, as coach, and I'm weaving this in, is you got to be the strategic planner for the business and involve other people in that. You got to plan. You got to lead. You got to organize. You got to control, which is execution. You got to be the business strategist for the team. What's our direction? Where are we going here? You know, what's our agenda for the month? Okay. What are we working on? And then you got to be a coach, which is, you know, you remember your baseball coach, your golf coach, or whatever, and they're kind of showing you how to do it, and then they tell you to go do it, and then they debrief you and tell you whether or not you did it the right way, and tell you, well, you need to refine this, you need to tweak that. That's your job. You're this coach. So those are the hats that you carry as a leader. Okay? You're the conductor. Time for the strings. It's time for the bass. Time for the horns. You know, you're the conductor of this thing. Okay. All right. So when I get with you all, I say, what's on your mind? I have an agenda. What do you need from me and the rest of the team to deliver on your commitments to us? So that's your role as leader. What's slowing your progress? What could you accomplish if it wasn't there? These are all questions. It's in page 36 of your guidebook. When you worry about work, about life, what occupies your thoughts? I used to walk my boardroom and I would look at somebody's face and I knew that somebody had a problem. And when they did, I asked them. I'd go into their office, I'd shut the door. Because when I brought them into my office, they felt like, oh my God, you know, what's Curtis gonna get me for today? And so I'd go in their office. I said, Chuck, you're not looking too good to me today. What's going on here? Oh man, my wife just grabbed my checkbook and she's been a spendthrift on the money. And I, quite frankly, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't look, I didn't check. And I had one of those real life situations and I had to help them with a solution. You know, got to cut off the spigot, got to retrieve the checkbook, got to put a moratorium, got to give her a feeder account. She gets an allowance. Okay. Any more than that, she's got to come and check in with you. And you ask them, you know, how am I doing? How am I doing? Yeah.
How much was that allowance?
How much was what now?
How much was that allowance?
Oh, well, you know, these are top guys. I mean, you know, what they were doing is not paying attention. So the wife didn't pay attention either. They were never accountable for what their spending habits were. So, I don't remember what the amount of money was, but let's just say, you know, he had enough in his account. She was just burning through it. So what are the most impactful takeaways from our conversation today? So that's what you're asking your people. You're saying, what did you value today? What did you take away? And that's what you do as a leader. Okay. All right. Let's start thinking about the metrics that you want to measure. So that, you know, as a game board, your team knows how they're being measured. I'll be honest. I'm coaching a team and they got a young female FA on the team. And it just blew me away that she didn't even know what her goals were. It's like swimming in a sea of tranquility, drowning. She just didn't know. And once she knew, it was like, oh, wow, it was an aha moment. You know, we had to refine, retrain, reboot, reinvent. So make sure your team members know what their goals are and have accountability. And there's consequences for not hitting the goals. No bonus. No free lunch today. You know, if you're bringing food in, you know, we got, you know, come up with something but their consequences are also positive. That if they hit the goals and targets, they get rewards. So you can give them positive consequences. Okay. All right. So one of the things that I'd like you to think about is looking at gaps for your team. So you look at all these director roles, and then I want you to find out, where are the gaps? Are there gaps in planning? Are there gaps in plan implementation? Are there gaps in brand and service, which is your concierge practice? Are there gaps in marketing and growth? The 90-day free look, the COIs, networking, mastermind group. And we haven't got into all the acquisition methodologies yet. Are there gaps in leadership? You know, one of the phrases I use is inspect what you expect. So, you know, are you just kind of looking at what the results were in the following week? Are you inspecting what you expect? If you're expecting a certain level of performance, did you inspect it to see if you got it? And if you didn't get it, then you got to go back, right? You got to go back. You got to figure out what happened. Why didn't we get it? Okay. Going to turn this into a well-oiled machine. We're not going to be hard on people. We're going to be nice. We're going to be friendly. And we're going to give them stretch goals. But we're going to inspect what we expect. Okay? And we're going to give them positive consequences if they achieve it. Okay. I think it's now time, when you look at page 39 in your guidebook, and then we're going to conclude with this, is start getting folders for your segmented top 80 to 85 client relationships and for the prospects that you're going to be receiving, okay? For your COIs, folders for mastermind groups, okay? So if you look in there, you can order them and we'll talk about the contents later that go into the folders. And, you know, typically what we do is you get an intern or a administrative assistant that puts those together for you. So when you get in your calendar and you get all that organized, I walk into your office, I see four folders on your desk, okay? And I open it up. It has, we talked about segmentation. We talked about the five-star model. I wanted them to read the first chapter in Supernova Teams. Next chapter 3, first chapter of the book. We talked about a CSD, client services unit. Okay. So I've got a few notes in there. So those are like, tell me what the next call is going to be about. Okay. Now, I'm going to stop right there. I've hit you with a lot of material. Questions, comments about anything that we have covered today? Let's start with Lenny.
First thing, it's great. I see that we do have us. If you let Sydney know, we're scheduled for next Friday, which is the Friday of Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Schedule that because none of us will be around.
Okay.
And then second, I'd be very curious to learn, you know, maybe in the next one, you know, obviously the recruiting and B, interns, because I think we do a horrible job as far as interns and what they do, you know, with the folders and how you implement that.
Okay. Recruiting and interns. Okay. Discuss. Okay. All right, let's go with who else?
I think you know, like you said, the gaps. We have a lot of gaps in our team, just because I think initially and the way we've always run it is we're kind of thinking a little too small. So having that client service associate and adding the pieces to the team is going to enhance the production. So I think we need to help fill those gaps, and that'll help like you said, make that well-oiled machine. So,
okay, great. But
give to get.
Exactly. Okay, Brent.
I agree with Mario and Lenny. I mean, just finding out how I can leverage everything else that I'm doing and have other people kind of create this, like just basically all share the same vision to create this, create this concept. And I just feel like, I'm just speaking out of personal annoyances, but I feel like I just do everything and I'm just literally the most ineffective, using my time so ineffectively. So just how I can leverage other people to do things and create this vision is what I'm trying to say.
Exactly. You know, you probably started off in the business as this really, really great, professional advisor. And now, it's moving toward leadership and getting people to do things through you. So that's what's happening.
Yeah. Just like the big thing I've realized over the last like few months is to identify things that are not my responsibility and draw the line. And I'm trying to cross that bridge as we speak, but like, I just really, I'm not like doing a good service to anyone by taking on all these unnecessary tasks. So that's where my goal is.
Okay. All right. Good. Good. I don't think, Mario, you were about to say something.
Yeah, I think that you were saying that director of leadership is something that I think we're missing.
Okay.
And I think it's because of COVID too, we're all sporadically in the office.
Right.
If there was that one leader that's consistently contacting everybody, right? So if I come to the office one day and people from Brandt's team are here, people from Mike's team are here, and then vice versa, if I'm not here and they see Brandt, it's kind of like, what's going on? So I think if you, like you said, if you have that one person, whoever it is, that's more consistent with that and getting more involved, that would be very helpful.
Right. So that's something that you have to work out. Now, remember, leadership is shared, servant leadership, right? So that's what you're working toward.
Yep.
Okay. And Mr. Goldberg's on a plane, so I can't address
him. I'm still on the plane. I'm still in the air. I'm here.
Yeah.
But okay. I would agree. Just a quick thing so I don't disturb everybody on the plane for a while. But just a quick thing. I would say what the guy said was right on, spot on. I think our issue with delegation a lot of times
right.
is not doing enough. The four of us, what we've done a lot of is taking everything upon ourselves.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That limits your ability to grow until
yes.
you can kind of delegate it out to other people.
Right.
And I know that's what Brandt was referencing. So,
yeah. Okay. So now we know what the mindset is, right? Okay. The good guys. I mean, we know what the mindset is. We know where we're trying to go. We're not there yet. If you were, you wouldn't need me. So, I look at it that way. If everything was running terrific, you just wouldn't want me. If you didn't want to grow, you wouldn't need me. So don't worry about it. But we're going to take hold of these concepts, and that's what I want you to be thinking about prior to our next session. So continue to introduce Supernova to your clients. Assign members of your team responsibilities. Meet with your team and ask them to rank themselves in the competence in the five areas and the gaps. And you're going to need engagement of all your team members. So you're going to start building this team, build that core team around you. Okay. Have yourself a wonderful weekend and rest of the day. And I'll chat with you all next time.
Thanks, Curtis.
All righty. Take care.
Thanks, Curtis.